Hey, this is Gunn from the podcast, The Indefensible Middle Ground, and it is Monday, the 13th of June, 2016. We are reeling as a country from the largest mass shooting that we've seen, and it attacked our LGBTQ community in Florida. It was another terrorist attack by somebody claiming to be on the side of ISIS, pledging their allegiance to ISIS while they did the attack. It's heartbreaking. He specifically targeted this gay friendly club in Florida, and our hearts are still broken. We're still pretty shook up about this, and I just wanted to get that out of the way, that the politicians are busy pointing at each other, and they're pointing the fingers this way and that way, and sometimes they make good points, sometimes they don't. The issue at the moment for me is there are survivors who need blood, and that's what we should be focusing on right at this very moment. The survivors who need blood in Florida hospitals. If you are in the United States of America, you are close enough to affect the situation. If you can go to the Red Cross and donate blood or red cells, please do. Please look up a blood drive. I'm going to try to put a link to the American Red Cross in this. Secret Society's podcast number 2, because I really want to get my mind off things. And I've been procrastinating doing another Secret Society's podcast. In the last podcast about Secret Societies, I interviewed somebody from the Independent Order of Odd Fellows, and then I talked briefly about the Ordo Templi Orientis. Now, why I talked about OTO is because if you try to look up Freemasonry or occult stuff or pretty much anything having to do with alchemy or history or the Knights Templar, you'll probably bump into Aleister Crowley and the OTO. It's just something they've branded themselves in such a way. They use so many of the same keywords that all the big secret societies use. They use those same keywords, therefore, when you search for those keywords, you get OTO. And I've noticed that a lot of the conspiracy things online that are afraid of secret societies are afraid of secret societies because of the OTO, because everything they look up about Freemasonry gets them pictures of Aleister Crowley looking at the camera all scary and stuff like that. And if you actually read Aleister Crowley's stuff, yeah, there's some really weird stuff in there. But most of it is symbolic. Let me just put it bluntly. Most of the stuff in Aleister Crowley's stuff is symbolic of sex. The creepy, violent, angry-sounding stuff in Thelema, in the Book of the Law, Liber Alva Legis, it's a lot of it, from what I've been told, is it just has to do with sex. And then one of the biggest rules that he was against was kosher laws that prevented men from being able to have sex with their wife. He says, if you're married, you should have sex, which that's a weird jumping off point. I feel like that's just my personal beliefs. I think Crowley, being raised as a very devout Christian, when he rebelled so much against the 66-book Christian Bible that he rebelled against the Jesus stuff. He called himself the Antichrist. He rebelled against the Jewish part of the Bible, going against kosher laws and stuff like that. So he had his own thing. He had his own beefs with everything, and that's him. That's fine. He also really loved Judaism in different aspects and started his own secret society that studied the Tree of Life, called AA. That's what he called his society. Now, why that's significant is because nowadays, Aleister Crowley, who did not found the OTO, that's one of the big points, he did not found the OTO. But all of his work is now completely entwined with the OTO. Completely. 100%. It is essentially his religion, Thelema, which runs the OTO. So, the OTO doesn't really qualify as a secret society anymore because it's a religion. That's where that falls. And I would love for anyone wanting to tell me different, please call in. We have the number everywhere. Go ahead and just let me know if Thelema is not a religion, if OTO is not a Thelemic organization. I'd be happy to chat it out with you. So feel free to call in or text or email. It's all there for you. The podcast with the E at the end of it at gmail.com. And our email, or in our phone number, which of course is 1-856-67-78559. That's 856-67-SULLY. And from there, I want to talk about the organizations that are not into OTO is into sex magic, they're into demonography, they're into other mystical meditation and stuff like that. Now, I'm not saying that there aren't people in other organizations that are into that, but I am saying that that's an official part of being an OTO person, is you are into this stuff. This is the stuff that you understand you're going to be talking about. You're going to be talking about sex. You're going to be talking about magic. You're going to be talking about meditation. Now, Knights of Pythias, Odd Fellows, Freemasons, these are not groups associated with the OTO. These are benevolent fraternities. These are progressive fraternities. And the reason why I bring up the OTO is because I really want people, if you are trying to understand secret societies, you should really understand the difference between these groups. Because a lot of people just go, hey, I'm a Christian. If something is not a church, it's all the same scary thing that's just those people over there. And that's not how it is. Those groups have differences between themselves, and other groups have differences with them. The anti-Mason and anti-secret society books that I've enjoyed reading, because they're paranoid, they're afraid of anything that's not Christian, and they're also the best view of legitimate complaints against secret societies. When you go back to the 1800s, you find the purest form of anti-secret society rhetoric. And a lot of that is, these people are in secret, therefore they can do crimes. These people need to meet in secret because they're probably doing something that's against my religious beliefs. That's the number one concern that people have. Secrecy makes it easier to do bad things. The fear did not have anything to do with them conjuring the devil, them having grotesque sex orgies like the times of Rome and Greece. No, it was basically just, we're afraid of these groups because they have privacy. We're afraid of these groups because they can do things behind closed doors and then they can get away with stuff. So, that being the case, I would like to read an excerpt from an Independent Order of Odd Fellows companion, where he refers to the people who don't like secret societies as Cenosaurians. And I would like to go ahead and you're going to hear a couple names. Blanchard, J. Blanchard of Wheaton College. That's a fun one to look up if you want to look up some secret society stuff. J. Blanchard of Wheaton College has written several exposés exposing the devilry of Masonry and secret societies and the Oddfellows. Oh, the Oddfellows, they're the devil. Yes. So The Oddfellows are the sweetest people you ever want to meet, just so you know. So Blanchard's a wackadoo and a hyper-conservative guy who didn't like progressive orders that included multiple faces, as well as Ronayne. Ronayne, which this author is going to refer to as the seceding Mason. And Ronayne has written several books where he calls Masonry anti-Christian and all sorts of very eccentric, fearful stuff, and Baal worship and all this. So, of course, these are two men who lived to ripe old ages and died in their sleep, as far as I know. These weren't people who the Masons hunted down and killed. So that's what this author is poking fun at here in this article. So just one moment. Dr. Samuel Willard. The Sinosurians. I regret that by absence from Chicago I missed the congregating of the Sinosurians, or extirpators of secret societies. I am ashamed to say that it might have been amusing, for however comical men may appear to be who do and say silly things, they are still more pitiable, and one may well shed a tear for such human frailty. And over the fact that men in such positions can be so lacking in charity and in sound judgment. It does not surprise me that when men should oppose secret societies... It does not surprise me that men should oppose secret societies. I freely concede that secrecy brings up the question whether there is not something under it that will not bear the light. There have been abundant instances of abuse of secrecy, and there will be such as long as rogues combine to do deeds of darkness. But is it not strange that men should assume on such slight grounds that their neighbors and friends, whose ordinary conduct they do not try to impugn, are persistently knaves and fools? Grant for the present that the ceremonials of the lodge of all orders are solemn silliness. Does it not follow that our secrecies are cloaks of mischief? Here is the pitiful uncharitableness of Blanchard and Company. That's the J. Blanchard of Wheaton College I mentioned. The old saying is that men judge others by themselves. According to this, it must be that they feel that they could not be trusted in secrecy, and that if they met as we do, it could be for evil only and continually. That's a good zinger right there. That's an 1800s zinger, basically pointing out that Blanchard, the good Christian upstanding man, is afraid of secrecy, because if somebody left him alone with his friends, they would no doubt be up to no good, because you judge others by yourselves. What would a kindly, charitable man say? Most surely this, that men have occasion to do good and right things without the knowledge of all the world, and that until the workings of even a secret society were positively bad, he would regard them as only unwise. I have not... One moment. Okay, let me find my place here. I have not seen anything purporting to come from Mr. Ronayne, the seceding Mason, that charges any immortality upon Masons in their lodges. Does he make such charges? And when these men talk about their taking their lives in their hands, who do they mean? What do they mean? Do they suppose that they are worth killing? Does Ronayne search his closets and look under the bed before undressing to find a Masonic assassin? Is Blanchard fearful of daggers from odd fellows and Knights of Pythias? Whenever I meet that venerable and pleasant-looking old gentleman Philo Carpenter, noted for his benevolence in past times, I'm inclined to smile and think of... I'm inclined to smile as I think of the, quote, terrible wickedness, unquote, with which he supposes himself to grapple in these later days. Or do these men mean that they are doing something so opposed to the common sense of mankind that they cannot earn a livelihood and get employed while opposing masonry and odd fellowship? I think they will find such stuff is not worth paying for. But they tell us of William Morgan and that famous abduction or disappearance. Now I am old enough to remember something of the excitement on that subject and of its effects on my relatives, some of whom were Masons. And I long ago saw that if all that was alleged of Masonic complicity in that affair was true, the organization got such a terrible lesson that neither Masons nor any other secret or private society in America will ever lay itself under the remotest suspicion of such an act hereafter. I say this because I always argue as far as I can from the opponent's facts. I would like to point out, too, for the listener, the William Morgan event that he's referring to was a Mason who came out stating, you know, oh, here's the stuff. He did like an expose on masonry, and then he got abducted and disappeared. So, and everyone is quite sure that it was the Masons who did it, and that's what really spawned a huge anti-Mason movement. Now, it could be just a few guys in his lodge who took things a little too seriously, a little too far. It could be that he was just scared and ran away, afraid that that was going to happen. The mystery is still kind of open on that one. There hasn't been a body of associated with William Morgan, so nobody really knows what happened to him, but everybody uses that to say, see, this one guy that disappeared is complete evidence that all Masons are evil. So, moving on, I say this because I always argue as far as I can from opponents' facts. Granting the facts, the deduction is precisely the opposite of theirs. As Peter was cured by denying Christ and Paul, as Peter was cured of denying Christ and Paul, persecuting his followers by their experience in those very things, he's saying Peter was cured by denying Christ in the Christian New Testament. Paul was cured when he became a Christian by persecuting the followers of Christ. Okay. By their experience in those very things, so the Masons of today are secure from any wickedness charged upon a former generation and from any temptation to it as one of the results of that abhorred time. As to our society, the Independent Order of Odd Fellows, there are thousands of men who have been members of the order and who have, for various reasons, left it. Their silence when invited to testify against us is evidence for us and against the Cenosurians. We are not said to have bound them with any oaths or threats. They do not take their lives in their hands if they speak against us. And all that I have ever heard of any of them say against us is merely this, that our ceremonies amount to nothing, and that we do not as much as we promise. To these 2 points, I have only to reply that the effect of the ceremony depends upon how you look at it. If it is significant and impressive to you, you will find the reason of that in yourself. You have only to go into a Catholic church if you are a strong Protestant or a free thinker. There you will see multitudes of deep feeling in view of what is to you but mummery. Who but an American feels his heart swell at the sight of a starred and striped cloth waving in the wind? Who but a Scotchman cares about for a thistle? And next, as to our promises, I aver that we keep our promises as well as mankind generally, as well as the churches, as well as men and women do in marriage, as well as banks do. All of these fail sometimes. And if the Sinusurians cannot afford to be charitable towards us, let us be so toward them, and bring no railing and abusive reply, for we can win by reason and fact. That was a very well thought out, very well written response to anti-secret society rhetoric from Dr. Samuel Willard, the Illinois Department of Independent Order of Odd Fellows. And this is quite an old collection of text that goes back to the late 1800s. See if I can find the exact number for you here. But it is to my point that the arguments against secret societies were not because of sex, and not because of demons, and not because of the devil and such sensational overtones. As Dr. Willard said there, you should argue from the other side. You should argue from your opponent's side so that you can have a balanced response. And so to see what people really had against secret societies, look before the sensationalism. And there's two names that need to be discussed that added to the sensationalism, which is the two biggest names are Aleister Crowley and the biggest name, the biggest hoaxer of all times, which is a French writer. Holy crap, did I just blank on his name? I did. I forgot his name. For the best, then. No, it's not. Leo Taxil. Leo Taxil was the big hoaxer from France. He was an atheist, essentially. He was an atheist before being an atheist was cool, and he, back in the 1890s, came up with a way to really stick it to everybody, to stick it to those God-believing, uptight Freemasons, and stick it to the Catholic Church by pretending to be a Freemason that outed all the rest of Freemasons as devil-worshipping monsters. He even came up with a character called Diana Vaughn, who was the high priestess of the Dark Orders, and she sacrificed babies and all sorts of horrible stuff, and she's wanting to come to Christ because of the letters that she's sending him back and forth. Also, he is having letters sent back and forth between Albert Pike, the grand commander, grand poobah of all secret societies, according to Leo Taxil. He was not talking with Albert Pike. He was not talking with Diana Vaughn. Diana Vaughn didn't even exist. Albert Pike was not in communications with Leo, and it was all just a hoax. All the anti-masonry up to this point was basically just people going, hey, their rituals are kind of weird. Here's some of the rituals that we've stolen. What do you think? Jay Blanchard, Ronayne, these sorts of characters who were expose people. They were just taking some ritual stuff and saying, see, this isn't Christian. What are we doing? Walking around in circles, blah, 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 blah. It's evil. It's witchcraft, probably. I don't know, but whatever. Look at it. It's not Christian. That's all I can say for sure. So the arguments against Freemasonry get knocked up to this crazy level, because you go from having arguments, very boring, basically, arguments against Freemasonry by Blanchard of Wheaton College and Ronayne, and as he mentioned, Philo Carpenter. Oh, if you notice, too, the author, Dr. Samuel Willard, was very lovingly referring to Philo Carpenter, because Dr. Willard's an odd fellow, which is an incredibly benevolent organization. They believe in friendship, love, and truth. They believe in charity and kindness. And Philo Carpenter was a big landowner and a big medical outreach guy in Chicago back before he got there, before it was Chicago, when it was the Dearborn Outpost. So he was mentioned in a bigwig who, in his older years, became a Sinosaurian, or whatever they were calling anti-secret society people. Okay, so back to Leo Taxiel. Leo Taxiel turned it up to 11. You had people going, "Nah, secret societies are kind of weird, and they're not Christian." And Leo Taxiel was, he was smart enough to capitalize on that. He was like, "Ah, I see my in," and his ability to steal people's identity and his ability to exaggerate things allowed him to be one of the biggest hoaxers of all time. Now he, not only was it found out to be a hoax, it wasn't found out to be a hoax. He admitted that it was a hoax. Excuse me. He admitted that it was a hoax. He actually had a whole big dealio where he brought in the bigwigs from the Catholic Church and even invited a bunch of Freemasons to come and see the coming out party of Diana Vaughn. Diana Vaughn was going to reveal herself as the Queen Mistress of the Dark, and that she, and announced that she was becoming a Christian, that she was converting to Catholicism in an act of contrition for all the evil devil worshipery that she's done. Now, actually, what happened was she came out on stage with Leo Taxiel in front of this giant room full of people, and according to different accounts, he basically said, "This woman sitting in this chair behind me, I'm not going to introduce. She's not going to come up and talk because she's not Diana Vaughn. She is Diana Vaughn because she doesn't exist. Diana Vaughn doesn't exist. This is my typist, and I made the whole thing up. This whole thing is a big hoax. You guys are suckers." And a riot breaks out. Like, ridiculous. They are trying to kill this man. According to the a lot of reports, it was the Masons who were just laughing it up, and it was the Catholics who were trying to kill him. And according to the Catholics, they said, "Oh, he should have been glad that we were good Christian gentlemen, because otherwise he would have been torn apart." But needless to say, the cops were called. So people were pretty upset. We're pretty actively trying to get at Mr. Taxiel for his ridiculous words and his stunt and wasting everyone's time, I think, was his biggest crime. So throughout history, though, whenever someone goes to look up stuff about the Freemasons, they almost always get pictures associated with Freemasonry that Leo Taxiel made, Leo Taxiel popularized, that Leo Taxiel inspired. Now, his involvement in Masonry was super limited, so this was all basically stuff that he made up himself from books and connections that he himself fabricated. And that was Leo Texiel. Now, Leo Texiel was the hoaxer. Aleister Crowley, the other name that I mentioned, he was not a hoaxer. He was something else. He was a guy who was into all the occult and mysticism that existed before the rise of kind of the uptight modern movements, and he tried to dig a lot of that up. He was a member of an order called the Golden Dawn. Now, the Golden Dawn is not Freemasonry. Some people could say that there's elements of the Golden Dawn that are connected to Freemasonry, but Crowley was not really a part of that world. He wasn't part of the Albert Pike world. He came on the scene in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and then he went on from there to create a religion. So, it's one of those things, though. If you go trying to look up Freemasonry, you're going to bump into hoax stuff written by Leo Texiel, and you're going to bump into religious stuff written by Aleister Crowley, stuff that looks very similar to Freemasonry. It walks like Freemasonry, it talks like Freemasonry, but it's actually something completely different. And I'm always sort of blown away by the anti-Christian elements of Crowley stuff, which I think is sort of interesting now, because Christianity fits into Freemasonry very snugly, as well with Odd Fellowship. Odd Fellowship includes a parable told by Jesus in their ritual. So it's it's not a Christian order, but Christianity fits very snugly within legitimate secret societies, mainstream secret societies. And I don't understand the anti-Christian nature of... Oh, well, it makes sense if you're starting your own religion and you're not part of a secret society that's inclusive of all religious views. It makes sense, I suppose, to be exclusive. That's his deal. Fine. I can't really rationalize it. I can't work my head around it because I'm an inclusive person. I believe in including all races and religions. And if you're into having your own point of view be the one main one, I guess that's his deal. But once again, there is a huge difference between secret societies and the spooky devil worship stuff. And I'm forced to bring this up because of the internet, basically. I watch these ridiculous secret society videos on the internet, and I watch them cobble together the boogeymen of Leo Texiel with the religion of Aleister Crowley, and then they slap a square and compass on it and go, "See, all these devil-worshipping Freemasons." And it just gives me a headache, and that's why the Secret Society's podcasts are going to continue to be a literate view of secret societies. Next podcast, we're going to get into Albert Pike. We're going to talk about him, a guy who is a big boogeyman in the Leo Texiel world, and himself, Pike was a very prolific writer, and Pike was himself an Odd Fellow and a Freemason. So he was a dual traveler of secret society logic, and we're going to discuss Morals and Dogma of Albert Pike in the next Secret Societies podcast. No promise on when that's going to be, but I've already done my homework on it, so it should be soon. This is Gunn Sully from the podcast The Indefensible Middle Ground, apologizing for weird audio quality in this episode. I've had a lot of technical issues. It must be the Illuminati coming after me, right? So we'll see you next time. Bye.